Staying Alive UK. Share your story.
Hello and welcome to the Share Your Story podcast series, a business biography, their story so far. My name is Michael De Groot and I am Chief Storyteller at Staying Alive UK. My purpose through this podcast series is to allow my guests, through their stories, inspire you to take the first step towards your new business venture, or maybe if you are already in business, develop your existing business even further. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you have a massive choice in which podcasts you listen to. And I'm delighted to welcome on the podcast today, Rachel Jones. And before you hear from Rachel, let me, as always, give you a short introduction. During her 19-year career as an employee in large multinational corporations, she not only survived but thrived during inevitable periods of change. First-hand experience of working through acquisitions, mergers and separations, coupled with change she instigated to take her career into new roles and business sectors, which has enabled her to grow a unique skill set that she can draw upon to help clients with their own change journeys, either business or personal. People development, coaching and mentoring are passions of hers. Outside of work, you will mostly find her writing, working towards her third Dan Black Belt in Tang Soo Do, or volunteering. In 2016, she climbed to Everest Base Camp and Kala Patar, raising £10,600 for the Steve Prescott Foundation. She's also an active member of Rotary International. Welcome to the Share Your Story podcast, Rachel. How are you doing today?
I'm very good, thanks, Michael. How are you?
Yeah, brilliant. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to hearing your story. And I should just say at the outset, this is an unusual one because my podcast is about business owners that are in business who've got less than 9 employees, and we hear about their story into business and how they've got on, etc. And yours is a bit unusual because you are running your own business on the side and you are also employed, which of course is a great way for people to start their business. So I'm really interested to hear how this has all evolved and how this has come about and how you're managing it with your employer and everything else. So my first question always is to hear a little bit about you, Rachel, behind the business, a bit about your personal life, where you were born, where you now live, a bit about your education, obviously, and, you know, your family, whatever you want to share there. And then any hobbies and interests, so people get a sense of Rachel Jones. So over to you, Rachel.
Okay. Born in a little town called Belper in Derbyshire in the UK.
Yeah.
My parents, fairly quickly, I would have been about 2 years old, I got the opportunity to go and work out in the United Arab Emirates.
Wow.
And not giving my age away too precisely, that would have been in 1979. So they were kind of pretty much part of the pioneering expat community out there. So that's where I was kind of born and raised. We remained there living in various kind of Emirate states through till around 1988, when I came back to the UK because my dad took further kind of work contracts in and around the Middle East, not necessarily appropriate for you know, having families out with him.
No.
Settled then in Staffordshire, where I did my kind of high school education. And then I moved to Northeast England for university. I went up to Durham University.
Right.
Where I read geology as a degree.
Wow.
It was interesting. And then I moved to Manchester on graduating for my first job, which was in a logistics industry, so warehousing and distribution.
And had you had done any work before that, or was that literally as a graduate kind of trainee that you did that?
that particular woman's a graduate trainee. What I've tended to do, and I guess we'll kind of pick the theme up of this, is I tend to kind of look at focusing on things I'm interested in. And that's kind of the areas I'll kind of take for my next step. I mean, I had done summer jobs previously. While I was at high school, I was, you'd probably describe me as kind of fairly quiet, fairly shy. And I thought, well, going to university, fresh start, new people, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be the quiet one. So I took a summer job selling double glazing door to door.
Wow.
Before I went, which was, you know, massively out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
At the time. But, you know, it kind of gave me a good appreciation of, well, just being able to kind of, you know, knock on doors and talk to complete and utter strangers. So,
well, how did you get on with that? Did you sell any?
I did for a while. I was, I don't kind of consider myself to be a natural salesperson. But I did get into conversation around some of that, you know, the local kind of geography, local history. One of the areas I went to was actually along Watling Street. And I got talking to somebody who was a local history teacher about, you know, just general, you know, the Roman.
Yeah, Roman roads.
And she ended up buying a full house of windows and a conservatory from me, which wasn't too bad, really, considering it was just a chat.
That's interesting. Very interesting. And what made you... So was that to help you gain more confidence then, that you wanted to do that?
Yes. Yeah, exactly for that reason.
But that's a major one, isn't it? I mean, selling double glazed windows is, it's like frowned upon by a lot of people. And so you really had, you pushed yourself to do that.
Yeah, massively. I worked there for about 3 months. So from finishing A-levels before going off to university, obviously, you know, save some money to supplement the, you know, the college lifestyle and stuff. But yeah, that was the, the main focus was really to get that communication sorted.
Well, I'm glad I asked that question because I think that's really interesting. Okay, carry on then. So you got your first proper job.
Yep. First proper job. I had a couple of summer jobs in a kind of a geological framework, really, kind of related to my degree. But it wasn't really something that I could see myself doing longer term. So looked around for the next thing to interest me and came across kind of logistics and warehousing.
Right.
So went on the graduate training scheme then for a company that now it's been bought over so many times it doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Absorbed into something much bigger.
Yes.
But then moved up to Manchester, which is where I stay, and fortuitously met my now husband in that role. Have been staying in the Northwest ever since, really.
Wow. And then what? How long did you stay with that company that had all of the takeovers and things? And what did you do after that?
That particular company, I stayed at for 3 years. So I did the graduate training scheme, did some work within kind of IT implementations for, you know, warehouse management software. Decided that wasn't really for me, so took a role as a health and safety manager. So I looked after 4 warehouses in the northwest of England for about a year. Then fancied doing something slightly different, so moved to a software house.
Right.
Who specialised in warehouse management software. And I became a trainer implementer. So you travel to client site, implement the product, you know, project manage the installation, test it, make sure it all works, write and train them on the new business processes, and then kind of move on to the next client. So I did that for 3 years until we had our first young munchkin.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so did you take a break out then, some time out?
No, not to travel, because it was basically, you know, full weeks away from home, which would have been, you know, brilliant with a young baby to be able to get some sleep in a hotel, but not quite so far on my other half.
No.
So we took a decision to change that. So I worked for a telecoms company on contract for a few months, and the NHS is similar, the National Health Service. So doing kind of a variety of systems training roles, yes. Implementation roles, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And then moved from there to a a large IT outsourcing company who, again, don't exist anymore due to takeovers and mergers. And I've been there ever since, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the company you're with now?
Yes.
Yes.
It's for four companies down the line, but the same continuous service.
Same continuous service. And why did all these companies keep being taken over and changed, and why was that?
I think it's just kind of what happens, really, in large conglomerates. So the first company was bought by another IT company, which was Hewlett-Packard. Mm-hmm. Most people at least have heard of that one.
Yes.
And then Hewlett-Packard split into two functions. The laptop desktop business was spun out, and I remained in the rest of it, the services piece.
Yes.
That again then split out into two. And then that was that split then completed April this year when we've merged into a different company.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, in your bio, which I read out earlier, it talks about all of these acquisitions and mergers and separations and all of that change. How did that affect you when you were working for these companies, and how did you cope with that?
I think I'm probably or possibly fairly unusual, and I always see change as an opportunity. Mm. It's room to grow, room to change. Within that 11-year period that I've been working, effectively on continuous service,
yes,
I've held a number of different roles. So you kind of look and say, right, okay, this area now may or may not be, in scope to be split out into a different piece, or it may not be there. Okay, so where are my skills? Where can I move to?
Yes.
And then I've kind of managed my career then to look at, the kind of the growth areas or how else I can contribute, which basically helps me, manage that change, navigate the change, and then help the people I'm working with as well to the best of my ability to be able to do that. So at the moment, I work in the IT security space, mm-hmm. massive growth industry.
Yes.
But again, security was new to me 4 years ago.
Do you put yourself forward then to make those changes when these opportunities come about, or does your management, the leadership kind of say, oh, are you interested in moving here, or do you kind of take the lead on that?
I would take the lead on that. Normally, I think probably been fairly fortunate. I was still fairly young when I joined the first IT company, and the culture there has been the same through the others. You are in charge of your own career.
Really?
So you're not going to get stuff handed to you on a plate. You're in charge of it. World's your oyster. Think of something and go for it. Some people do. Some people don't. I kind of fall into that some people do category.
Brilliant. And were these jobs that were advertised that you had to go for, or did you go and approach people and say, I want to do that next?
A mixture of both. Yeah.
And did you get all of them, or were you disappointed sometimes that you couldn't get what you wanted?
Things can sometimes take a longer period of time than expected, especially with all the change that I've kind of mentioned. So, an opportunity that looks like it might come about then ends up either being reprioritized, or the corporate strategy changes as there's a move and there it isn't there again. Mm-hmm. So, my tactic for that is, right, okay, so that one's not quite worked. Still, I'm interested in doing something different. What else can I do?
Yeah.
So then I'll just, kind of go back and replan.
Brilliant. I like that attitude. That's very... and how did the people around you react to all of these changes? Were they all very similar to you in terms of their attitude? Is this common in the IT industry where people kind of roll with the dice and kind of go with the flow and see these changes as opportunities, or were they more challenged by it?
I think a mixture of the two things, depending on the individual's kind of set of circumstances and also mindset. So I've worked with both people. Where I have had close teams that I've worked with, or people management responsibilities. Obviously, I took it upon myself then to help coach and manage the team.
Yes.
To kind of help them kind of grow, evolve, look at where their skills are transferable and how they can then kind of make the most of that in their careers and keep themselves safe and ride the change out. And that's really where my kind of coaching started, really, in that space, which is, you know, what I found, you know, quite enjoyed. So decided to make a business around it later.
Okay, so you started helping people and doing a bit of mentoring and coaching around it, and then discovered you were good at it?
Yeah, it seemed to work for people. Ended up with, you know, people that I work with either, you know, finding new positions internally, doing the same things that I'd done, or deciding that, yeah, actually always fancied doing something different or working in a different industry. So they then ended up, you know, leaving the business and, you know, and going on to have, you know, more fulfilling careers elsewhere. So that's kind of really what I've been doing for probably the last, probably at least 8 to 9 years, just, you know, informally with people that I work with. Hewlett-Packard had a formal kind of coaching program, so a coaching network, which I joined, just to kind of expand, you know, my skills. There was training given, there was different types of coaching opportunities, which I took advantage of, obviously for my, you know, to be coached as well as to coach than other people. And it's just, yeah, it's something I kind of fell into doing that and have enjoyed ever since.
Wow, fabulous. And so you did have a little bit of formal training then, which gave you a bit of an insight into the whole kind of coaching, people development, mentoring world.
Yeah, some formal training. I tend to find, though, that I'm you know, really good at absorbing loads and loads and loads of information. I read a lot, always have done. You know, I'm kind of probably, you know, a couple of hundred books a year kind of girl.
Wow.
And it just sits in my head, but because I read in such volume, I don't necessarily remember in massive detail precisely what's gone through. So the same with the training. I know there's a whole load of coaching models and various things that you can use. Don't necessarily remember them precisely as the models or follow them through. But what it does do is allow me to kind of assimilate lots of different things. So when I'm speaking to somebody, I seem to be able to produce little pockets of, you know, useful things that they can try or suggestions for what they can do, you know, around self-analysis, so they can work out where it is they want to go. So I think that's been really helpful.
It's a massive subject, isn't it? The whole kind of coaching, and there's so many different strands. There are so many different modalities. There's so many different coaching schools and teachers. Some are good, some are bad. How did you, you know, decide to kind of, you know, develop yourself, and who did you learn with, or who taught you that you felt was the right company or individual to help you with this?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Not one I've thought through, to be honest. I think in terms of coaching side of things, it is mostly, you know, absorbed knowledge, things I've picked up from coaching, things at work, stuff that I mean, that I've mentioned before around reading, and some other kind of webinars and things that I've attended. I think it's mostly an evolved style, I guess, rather than something that's been taught to me specifically.
Right.
But it does very much focus on a fairly narrow niche, though, at the moment. You know, it's my area of kind of expertise, navigating people through change. So change at work, or you know, that they just fancy a different career, or, you know, they got to a point where they're just looking at it thinking, I've got 15, 20 years experience in X industry. I'm now a bit bored. What can I do? Well, obviously, you know, been there, done that, moved around loads. So I have that kind of understanding of where they're at, and strategies that have worked for me to enable me to have quite a varied career, you know, in terms of industry and roles I've done. So that's really what I base my coaching stuff on.
Right. So this is really interesting, because, you know, a lot of people get into the coaching world through their, let's say, trials and tribulations. They get assisted by a coach, or a, you know, reading a book or something, and then decide, actually, I've done this for myself. Now I feel like I can help somebody else do this as well. But what you're saying is similar but slightly different. So your experience in the whole, you know, change management, let's say it, in all of these different IT companies, all of these changes and mergers and acquisitions and separations and downsizing and right-sizing and all of those things.
Yeah.
You've gone through that whole kind of system and all of the challenges that you've had to overcome in that and made the most of it. So you're actually qualified through experience of that to help people do the same. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, that's absolutely how I see it. And it wasn't a conscious kind of, I guess, light bulb moment to think I can go on and coach people. Excuse me. So specifically with that, it was more of a, you know, the people that you work with day to day, obviously you build up kind of, you know, friendships and you know, with colleagues at work. And you can see people struggling. So, all right, well, I can help you with that. Let's see what we can do. Let's have a chat through it. You know, and where people had been, for example, put into pools to be made compulsorily redundant, never a pleasant thing, but obviously no. Work with people that were impacted with that. Then, okay, so, right, it's huge shame that you're going. Let's have a look and see what I can do to help you in your next step. And, you know, what you tend to find is people don't look at themselves the same way somebody else would. So if you were asked to kind of look at going through your strengths, or if you'd been somewhere for, say, 10, 15 years and effectively off the job market, it's a scary place to go back into again, especially if your CV, at that time contained things like your high school qualifications and that was pretty much it. To then be able to go back and say, well, what's all the threads of the professional experience I've got? What kind of thing is it that I want to go forward with? And how to pull all that together and then package that, but still retain, you know, themselves, so that somebody comes across as, you know, Rachel Jones, a person, rather than, you know, Rachel Jones, a product of, you know, 15 years of corporate jargon. And it's that kind of thing I started helping people with. And it's really kind of evolved through there then. So, you know, changes in role internally, you know, managing that change. I mean, where I am at the moment, we have a fairly standing joke where if we've had 6 months without some sort of, you know, strategy change or organizational structure change, then clearly there's something wrong. It's that frequent at the moment, which is a really good, you know, way of building up experience to help people, because living with constant change kind of means you have to be quite, you know, proactive at looking at your strategies to cope with it.
And does your current organization see you very much as having that role in the company or in your division, that you know, Rachel is somebody that we can go to and help, people can go and get some assistance there?
On a peer-to-peer level, yes, but not from a corporate perspective. My day job wouldn't really entertain. It doesn't have the same kind of responsibilities for it. I do project and program management as a day job.
Yeah.
So it's not an authorized part of my day job, if that makes sense. It's just something I will do for peers.
Right, got you. Okay, so it's not part of your roles and responsibilities,
no,
basically.
Exactly.
You're not assessed on it. No one's going, okay, Rachel, how are you getting on with Jim in the corner who's feeling a bit depressed because his job's going next week, or, you know, how are you getting on with Dave or Mary?
No,
it's okay. So, all right. So I get it. So it's the kind of, you've evolved in this, and your experience and your abilities have evolved with some training along the way, where you can help people in this whole kind of change in their business or personal life. So what's next then? Because you've set up your own business as a coach as well, alongside your employment.
Yep, I have indeed. The catalyst for me for making that change into kind of having my own business rather than just continuing as I had been doing and helping you know, colleagues out, which is something I don't think I'd stop doing anyway. Unfortunately, I lost my father to lung cancer. At the end of 2015. No, it's okay. But yeah, you kind of think he had been working for, you know, since he was, you know, 16, 17 years old, up to the point where he was going to retire. do all these great things, you know, with my mum, went, you know, see the world, all that kind of stuff when he hit retirement age. But unfortunately, didn't make it that far. So he passed away at the age of 63. Obviously, a little bit, you know, a couple of years shy of retirement age. And you do just kind of sit. Obviously, it causes you, you know, a period of reflection. You do kind of sit and look at things and think, do you know, really, I could continue doing what I'm doing for the next, you know, 20 years until I retire, or I could make a change.
Yes.
So that was kind of the catalyst, really, for me looking at doing something different. And I didn't immediately jump to coaching as a different industry. The first business I set up alongside my day job was actually a network marketing business. That had a specific purpose because I did a charity trek to Everest Base Camp in my dad's memory for a local charity. And that was basically, I used that as part of the retail business to fundraise basically towards that, that charity target.
Yes.
Realizing then that you can fit in, you know, a whole heap of fundraising, training for a trek, you know, the retail side of a business, alongside my day job, as well as then helping, you know, other people and, carrying on as I was doing at work, you kind of then left with a bit of a gap as to, oh, I did all this stuff in 2016 and now, you know, back to kind of normal day job again. I thought, you know, inspired by that, I'll take my coaching a bit more seriously and try and make something more of it.
Yes.
So that's why I kind of set that up then towards the end of 2016, at least 2017.
Great. And wow, that's brilliant. And so you just mentioned, you know, the network marketing business. Did you experience in that you got a lot of training as well from the organization? Because I know one of the things that network marketing businesses do, that they provide this training, you know, if they've got a good management team or group, then they do a lot of training on how to overcome objections and how to sell and how to contact your friends and family and all of those good things. But also there's a little bit of personal development there into it as well. Did you get any of that?
I did get some of that. The network marketing team I joined was with some ladies I had been at high school with.
Right.
So kind of knew them of old anyway. And my main focus really was on, you know, trying to get people to buy a product so I could use the margin from that then for my kind of fundraising fund. But it was really good. That, you know, the company I worked with was good. The training was really good. There's a big kind of like team spirit to it. But it didn't quite sit exactly with what I wanted to do. So that's kind of, you know, parked at the moment. What it did do though was kind of introduce me to some training given by, you know, sales for non-salespeople experts. I think there's a mutual acquaintance we both got with him, Phil Jones.
Yes.
So I ran with one of his training programs for about 8 months.
Yes.
Around kind of, you know, learning how to sell from somebody who, all right, apart from a brief foray with double glazing, really hadn't sold anything else before, you know, not in a formal setting anyway.
No.
Yeah, that kind of, you know, ongoing relationships continue because I'm doing some coaching with Phil at the moment.
Right. Brilliant.
But yeah, my experience of network marketing was really, really positive, to be honest. I had a really good, you know, supportive upline.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. So, we know why you decided to run your own business. So how are you going to manage this, Rachel? That's what I'm interested in, running your own business alongside, you know, being employed still. And what's the plan? You know, where how is this going to evolve? Do you know yet?
I've started to do some things with it. I'm working with a couple of clients at the moment. So it's around pockets of time. I guess, you know, many years spent as a project and program manager means I am like, you know, ridiculously organized, and I have to be really running, you know, full-time job, hobbies, household, business, two kids, all that kind of thing.
Yes.
So, you know, my days are fairly well scripted with, you know, quite key to-do lists, but I find it fairly easy just to fit everything in.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I do now. You know, certain days are scheduled for, you know, for me to kind of do, you know, I guess, training and development, write information on my blog. I've got certain nights that I work with particular clients, other nights that I go out and try and kind of, you know, speak to different people. But I'm also not like to back away from a challenge. I'm also writing a book Wow. at the moment as well. So it's quite busy in the old Jones household at the moment.
What's the book going to be about?
Pretty much what my niche is, so helping people to kind of take the, you know, effectively like a tangled ball of wool that might be their current life, and try and unpick the threads and work out where they then want each of those threads to lead. That's probably the best way of describing it at the moment.
Brilliant. You know, I was talking to my wife yesterday, and I came up, I don't know if this is particularly meaningful, but it might have some relevance to what we're talking about here. I said something along the lines of, if you really want to know or get to know a particular topic or master a particular skill or get trained in a certain technology or whatever it might be, the best way to get most of your training is to actually teach it. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, train other people how to do it. So I guess my next question for you is, right, you're starting off running your own coaching business. You've got some clients on board. You're getting some coaching yourself. Have you got a vision for training other people to do the same as well, apart from just coaching people? You know, where do you see this business evolving of yours?
I think that would certainly be something I wouldn't rule out in the future. Mm. Just thinking, one of the clients that I'm currently working with is actually looking to do a similar thing, moving into a different field. They're not into coaching, but they are also looking to leave their full-time job to set their own business up.
Yes.
So what I'm finding quite interesting is taking some of the kind of sales and marketing training that I've been experiencing. Mm-hmm. And teaching it onto them is then making the penny drop for things for me, which is brilliant. So exactly, you know, to pick up the analogy you mentioned before around, you know, you learn better if you have to teach it to somebody else.
Absolutely.
And it's absolutely true. And, you know, been a firm believer in that for years. If, you know, if you're not able to explain it to somebody else, you clearly haven't understood it properly yourself.
Mm. And actually, it also means if we are teaching other people some of the skills that we've learned, it actually makes us better at those skills too. Because if we have to keep repeating and talking about the subject matter, neurons are firing in our brain. They become hardwired effectively because you're having to access those neurons and talk about the same subject matter over and over and over again. And the reason I mention this is that there's, I don't know if you come across this lady, and if you haven't, I'd highly recommend you checking her out. Her name is Byron Katie in America, and she had a very challenging kind of young adult life and very, very depressed and everything. Anyway, she does something called The Work, and she, every single day, I think, it appears, there's another video that's on YouTube where she's talking about the subject. She's in a, you know, workshop talking about it, presenting it, explaining it to people, or she's on an interview. And I was listening to a podcast of hers the other day. And I said, you know, I'm convinced she's talking about that subject. The reason I said it, because she turned around and literally she said she doesn't have any negative thoughts anymore about people or situations. And I went, wow, that is incredible, you know. Mm. But because she's been teaching this stuff, she's hardwired it in her brain so much, she's become it effectively. You know, she's become her topic, her subject that she trains. And therefore, she's able to just, any negative stuff coming her way just falls, you know, down her back and disappears. And that's why I mention it, I guess. And I'm going a little bit off topic a little bit, but it's so interesting to hear you talk about the start of your journey. And I think it's very, very sensible to dip your kind of toe in promoting or developing your own business whilst you're still in employment. And was that a conscious decision?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm massively risk averse with things. In terms of, you know, salary, obviously, mortgage, kids, husband's working, but it you know, jumping into something that you still feel like you're not necessarily 100% skilled up in being able to run the business side of things.
Yes.
For me was a non-starter. Mm. So, you know, more than happy to take, you know, what spare time I've got, evenings and weekends, to work the business until it gets to the point where, you know, I could look to, you know, reduce my hours or you know, do this full time. That's kind of really where my strategy is with that.
And does your employer know that you have done this?
I haven't announced it specifically. I'm connected with people that I work with on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. You know, my employer, as I mentioned before, is a global IT outsourcing company. I don't infringe on that in any way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. And in terms of their kind of policies around, you know, other employment and other interests, so long as there's no, you know, overlap, as in I'm not going to go and get some of our corporate clients that suddenly, you know, being coached for whatever reason.
Yes.
Or I don't use, you know, obviously work resources. There isn't a challenge with that.
Brilliant.
You know, I think a lot of people have their own little side pockets of things, don't they?
I think everybody likes to think they have. I mean, sometimes people are so busy at home they haven't got time for that. But I think it's a sensible way to have people, you know, think and develop their own business. Try things out in that, you know, journey, so they can make up their mind if it's something they want to do full time. And providing, as you said, it doesn't conflict with your existing employer, you know, there isn't a risk really,
No.
because you're still employed, you're still being paid, and you're practicing. Mm-hmm, so
basically.
So, and I know your business is really young and you've only been going, what, 9 months? But nevertheless, you will have discovered some things on your journey that you would reflect on and go, I would have done that differently, or next time round I'll have to try something else out. So I'm still going to ask this question. If there was one bit of advice that you would have for aspiring business owners, what advice would that be, Rachel?
I think from my perspective, what has made a bigger difference to me is going out to meet people doing a similar thing.
So to
kind of add a little bit of context to that, you know, 99% of the people I know are employed corporate people. So I don't know many people, you know, with accepting the odd one or too many people who run their own businesses. Mm. So what kind of kept me moving quite slowly in the beginning, and, you know, was always that sense of fear, basically, you know, what if, you know, all these people who are, you know, running their own businesses have clearly got, you know, some secret sauce or like a magic superpower somewhere that, you know, I don't have, therefore. It's going to be, you know, who am I to kind of take myself out and you know, say, look, I can do this as well.
Mm.
But what I have done is, you know, I've joined a mastermind group. I've joined a couple of other groups on Facebook for like entrepreneur community. Mm-hmm. And you realize people are just normal people. They've got an idea. They're working with that as their business. You know, they're working really hard with it, but it kind of takes that, it demystifies it. You know, that they're having exactly the same challenges that as I am, albeit at scale, some of them.
Mm.
You know, for me with my website, traffic's, you know, still low enough that I can manage it myself. So it's not got the same, you know, impact as people getting, you know, 10, 20,000 hits a day.
Mm.
But the challenges are the same. You know, not enough hours in the day, finding the right expertise to help you with things that you don't know, having somebody who understands what you're going through to have a, you know, have a conversation with,
mm.
and having that support then from people who have been there, done that, and can give you some tips and advice. So, you know, for anybody looking at doing something similar to this, you know, taking out their own, you know, taking that step, sticking the head above the parapet and looking to do something else in their own business, finding people you can talk to that understand and you can kind of see yourself, you know, following their footsteps, maybe, you know, 2, 3, 4, I mean, even 5 years down the line, you know, for the people that are earning, you know, megabucks, it really helps put that into context and make it kind of less scary, really. I'd say that's probably my biggest learning from the last few months.
I think that is a brilliant thing. And there is an awful lot of what I call hashtag fake news out there, you know, where people are telling the world that they have got everything sorted and that they are doing so well and so brilliantly, and that's all they say. But behind the scenes, I'm not suggesting for a minute that people are fibbing, But behind the scenes, there are issues, you know, there are, they haven't got there overnight. Sometimes it will take people years to get to what they want to achieve. And, you know, whether it's me or other people that I know that are in business for themselves, it's a lonely and tough journey. And, but it can be very rewarding, and you are master of your own time. And you get out as much as you put in. And yeah, you're absolutely right. You've got to find like-minded people that are also on the journey and learn from them. And that's one of the reasons why I do the podcast, of course, because I want people to hear from people where they are. And you're such a really brilliant example of somebody who's going, who started on the journey of running their own business, has still got one foot in the employment camp and one foot in the, you know, self-employed camp, and experimenting and learning. So yeah, thank you for that. That's really fabulous advice. Wow. So I'm really interested to see how your journey evolves, Rachel, and how things are gonna, you know, take place. And last question I have for you, and that is, how can people get in touch with you? So if there's anybody there who would like to learn more about your coaching and how you help people through that journey of change, how can they get in touch with you?
Easily enough, I guess. I have a website. I have LinkedIn, Twitter. I have Instagram, which I'm just discovering, you know, down with the cool kids. With the surname of Jones, as you can imagine, there's a fair few variations on you know, there's a few Rachel Joneses in the world.
Yes.
Luckily, blessed with two middle names. So mine's Rachel, just with an E, RACHELCM, Jones.com. And, you know, at Rachel CM Jones for Twitter and Instagram, and Rachel CM Jones LinkedIn.
Okay, brilliant. So you've got your brand very clearly defined, Rachel CM Jones. That's C for Charlie, M for Mike. Jones.
Yep.
.com, and the same on Twitter, the same on Instagram as well.
Yep. Just starting on Instagram.
Same as Instagram. Okay, brilliant. So
and the same as LinkedIn.
I'll make sure, and LinkedIn, and I'll make sure to include all of these in the show notes and on my blog, and so people can find you. There's also a contact form on my blog, so fill out the contact form, and Rachel will get your email, and she'll take it from there. Rachel, I've got to ask this question because there's so much there that people can get hold of, but is there anything else that I've missed that you wanted to share with us, or have I covered it all?
I think you've covered most things. I guess if you wanted a closing comment,
yeah.
It would be, you know, to people who might be sitting on the fence thinking, you know, is my idea good enough? Is it something I can do? You know, just go for it. Mm. You know, you don't have to, you know, pack in everything that you currently do and then, you know, just focus on that as your one thing.
Mm.
Fit it in the nooks and crannies around your life. See how it pans out. And at least you'll know. At least you'll know you've tried.
I love that. That's great advice. Thank you so much, Rachel. And we haven't met in person, but I sure do hope that we are going to meet in person sometime in the future. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, and thanks for the opportunity, Michael. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks.
Staying Alive UK. Share your story.